stolen at birth and hustled out the back door of a small town Ohio clinic, sold to people waiting in cars. It is the true crime story of the babies delivered by Dr. Thomas Hicks in the 1950s and 60s. There are more than 200 of them, Hicks babies. And tonight, three of them are on Banfield. Plus the story of a Hicks employee and a member of Hicks' family reveals what the doctor's motives really were. It is all next on this special edition of Banfield. McKaysville, Georgia, 1950. Abortion is illegal, and women, both young and old, are desperate for help. They found it at the clinic of Dr. Thomas Hicks, who would perform illegal abortions, often advertising in phone booths and bus stations and bridges. But Dr. Hicks had a side hustle, selling full-term babies out the back door of the clinic, often telling the exhausted mother in the delivery room, "Your baby didn't make it." The story wouldn't surface until 1997, when a determined young woman went in search of answers about her adoption. What Jane Blasio discovered was that she was one of the youngest known Hicks babies alive, sold to adoptive parents waiting out the back door. And Jane joins us tonight. Jane, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about this remarkable story. You're a private investigator now. You're also the author of this book, Taken at Birth. How did Dr. Hicks get away with what he was doing for at least two decades?
There was a lot of looking away. He was the town doctor, and people looked up to him. People looked to doctors as being like God, and he made some decisions for people. He made a lot of decisions for people that he had no business making. But he wouldn't have been able to have made those decisions if the law enforcement at the time, the administration, as in like the mayor or the commissioner, would have done something, but they looked away. And sometimes they were part of.
Sometimes they were part of what?
Sometimes they were a part of what he was doing.
So how did it physically work? I mean, it's hard for anyone to imagine that a baby is born in a clinic and then somehow ends up out the back door to a car that speeds off. Was it really just that simple?
It was that simple in some cases, and then others were complicated. And I think that's what is at the root of this entire story, is that there were so many different perspectives of Dr. Hicks and how he did things. It just depended on what the need was. Was it that simple just to grab a baby and to send a fake birth certificate later? Yeah, you know, it was that simple back then because, like I said, they looked away. There was a lot of looking away.
Just looking at a picture of that back door, and I cannot even imagine the scene that transpired there over and over. As I recall from the details of your investigation, these babies would barely be cleaned off. I mean, they were seconds or minutes old before they were in that car, correct?
Some of them were. In my case, yes. But there was a time that the clinic was a bustling, vibrant place where my sister Michelle, who was also from the clinic, she was a Hicks baby, and she was bought 4 years before me. When my adoptive parents went down to get her, they took my adoptive mother, put her in a hospital gown, put her in a bed, and put the newborn baby in her arms as though she had just had the baby. And then they would bring my adoptive father in, and they pretended that she had just had a baby. So the difference between how he did it 4 years before me and then the handing me out the back door, still having the mucus and the blood and everything still covering me. There were a lot of different circumstances that he enabled and that he was doing.
So, Jane, what's amazing is that you're the investigator. You broke the story decades after it all happened, and you yourself were a sold baby. How did you stumble onto this? How did it even begin, this odyssey that you've been through?
simply, I don't like to be told no. No, I haven't liked it since I was a child when I first found out that I was adopted, and it has, run over into other aspects of my life, pushing me. But I don't like to be told no. And I don't think that I'm any different than anyone else. No one likes to be told no. They like to be told the truth. And when they're not told the truth, I think everybody knows. They have there's an intuition, and they're like, yeah, that just doesn't seem right. And that's what pushed me. Every aspect of this research over the years and in doing what I have done for almost 30 years was because I just was like, no, you're not going to tell me that that is not my birth story, that that's not my medical information, that that's not my heritage that was stolen from me. Somebody has to tell me where I came from. And it's that simple.
And then ultimately, you discovered it wasn't just you. There were more. And I'm assuming at some point the floodgates opened and you discovered the numbers were in the hundreds. What did that do to you personally as one of the hundreds and professionally as someone who was doing the investigation?
So I knew there were a handful of people growing up, my sister, my cousin Margie. There were some people that went to the same high school that I had heard their family names, kind of bantered around over the years. So I knew there were probably, I was thinking like maybe 20 or 30 people. But as I got into all these stories of Dr. Hicks and, the birth mothers and the birth fathers and the adoptive families, and then, of course, the information that was, that I had found on there being, possibly 200 other babies from this Hicks clinic, man, I will tell you that it dead stopped me, because up until that information, I thought I was out on my own and was doing this search on my own, which I had been for almost 15 years. But then I thought, wow, it's not just me. And wow, there's a lot of people. It's not just me. But my first thought wasn't, woe is me, or, oh my goodness, look at all of this bad stuff that's happened to so many people. My first inkling as an investigator, as a researcher, was to say, okay, well, I've been doing this by myself for this long. Now, maybe if I can get a group of people together, if I can get anyone else from the Hicks Clinic together, then I could possibly get more headway. Because at that point, I had information about and stories, about how he did things, about the abortions, about, talking with birth mothers and families and that. But I didn't have any information that was specific to either my sister Michelle's or my birth family. And I was still on the look for my birth family. So
a lot of the work product of yours, you detail in your book, Taken at Birth. It just makes your blood run cold to think about what so many people just like you have discovered about how they came into this world. You've called this a black market adoption ring. And what's so fascinating about how you discovered, like you said, people around you, is that you grew up in Akron, Ohio, not McKaysville, Georgia, where the clinic was. And it seemed, if you just do the math, that 200 babies ended up in Akron, Ohio, from McKaysville, Georgia. What was the pipeline, and how was it that all the babies ended up there?
So there were a couple different connections that knew Dr. Hicks. And there was one in particular. She had grown up in McKaysville. So she knew the area, and she knew Dr. Hicks. And then she moved to the Akron area and married a man here, and then she couldn't have children. So she contacted him knowing that he could help her with babies. And then she started letting her friends know, and then acquaintances know, if they couldn't have a baby, she knew where they could get one. And so
let me get this straight. She was a Hicks baby who went one generation up and was asking to adopt a Hicks baby.
No, she was not a Hicks baby, but she grew up in the area. She knew Dr. Hicks.
Okay. So that, because that would have been a blockbuster if that had happened. Okay. So the other thing I wanted to ask is that if there was this pipeline that went to Akron, Ohio, that you personally opened up and the floodgates just, gushed, are there other pipelines potentially to other cities around America that they don't have a Jane Blasio to investigate perhaps dozens or hundreds or thousands of others?
You are speaking my language. I believe that there are I believe that there's probably at least a couple other ones that are connected to the Hicks Clinic. And then, of course, I mean, this isn't back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and before that, this, you know, people played God. You know, they did things and they made decisions for people that weren't in a position to make their own decisions or were basically duped. And this happens all the time. And it's just not, it's not right. But yeah, I believe that there are plenty of other areas that have had the same plague.
So you have, it's interesting that you call this a plague. You have formed together social groups, communities of Hicks babies. How are you reaching out across the country to test the water effectively, to push your investigation from Akron, where obviously the pool was very rich, to maybe areas that did not have such a rich pool?
Well, I have... us Hicks babies, there are quite a few of us. We've all become like family to one another. There's a couple different groups that are very close with each other. And, you know, we share information. And so whenever I have information that comes up, then, of course, you know, I'm going to contact, you know, whomever I feel like it's going to apply to. And then it's like any type of research, it's like any type of investigation. You've got to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And
I can imagine that they would start coming out of the woodwork, especially when there's something like this, you know, a TV show that goes across the country and someone wonders, wow, maybe that's me. Let me turn the focus towards Dr. Hicks, because I think our viewers would be thinking, wow, he must have spent a long time in prison for all of this. He did not.
No, he did not. He lost his license in the state of Tennessee. Back in the 1920s, and don't quote me on that. I'll have to look that up. He lost that because he was selling drugs. And when I say selling drugs, he was working for the mining company. And then he was just kind of floating drugs to some of the miners and the locals. So then he moved his practice from Tennessee, just right over the state line, into Georgia. And then for 3 decades, he was able to go ahead and run his clinic. And so... you know, he didn't do any time. The second arrest and the second charges that had to do with the abortions, he was given a plea bargain because he was battling leukemia and he was quite old. And they basically said to him, if you just stop practicing, then we can go ahead and we can keep you out of prison. Which was interesting because we know because of my birth that he did not keep his end of the plea bargain because I was born in January of 65 and he lost his license December 8th of 64.
Wow. And what's also sort of wow is that you say the charges pertained to the illegal abortions before, you know, abortion became the law of the land in the 70s. But what about the selling of the babies for $800 to $1,000 a piece out the back door and sometimes telling the moms baby didn't live? What about those charges? Where were those?
Absolutely. Back in that time, there wasn't anything to apply. We have the modern day phrase of human trafficking. So if you apply those tenets to back at that time, then it was human trafficking. Where was the law? That is a good question. So it's, again, there's a lot of looking away back then. It's not that way now.
It's incredible. No, it sure isn't. Boy, oh boy, there would be no slap on the wrist. You lose your license, but, you know, goodness, we'll take pity on you because of your medical predicament. We have plenty of people serving and going to the prison infirmaries to get their care. Jane, stand by if you would. I have so many more questions I want to ask. Jane, you weren't the only baby taken at birth. When we come back after the break, we're going to meet two more Hicks babies and hear about their journeys to discovering that they, too, were taken at birth and what might surprise you, you don't necessarily think that Dr. Hicks was such a bad guy. What would it be that would make them think that way? That's next. For nearly 2 decades, Dr. Thomas Hicks sold hundreds of babies in illegal adoptions in the small town of McKaysville, Georgia. I'm joined by three of those Hicks babies. Jane Blasio is still with me, and I'm now joined by John Stapleton and Mark Eckenrode. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining the conversation. John, if I can begin with you, how did you find out that you were indeed one of the Hicks babies?
Basically, I was in the military at the time, and approximately around 1997, my sister, which is also a Hicks baby, she contacted me and kind of somewhat told me about the Dr. Hicks story and wanted me to get more involved. But at that time, I wasn't really interested. So it was approximately 1997.
That's a long time after you were actually spirited out the back door of that clinic. I would only assume you were resentful, but I shouldn't assume that. Were you?
At that time, no, I really wasn't. I was satisfied with my bringing up, with the parents that I had. So even not knowing who my biological mother and father were, I was satisfied. So again, at that time, I really wasn't interested in the whole process of trying to find my biological parents.
Did you also discover that your sister, Cindy, at that time was also a Hicks baby?
Yes. She's the one that brought it to my attention as far as the stolen at birth.
So how does Cindy feel about it?
She was more, I would say, like Jane as far as who, what, where, why. And then, like I said, she wanted to get me really involved. But with being active military and deploying, that was really the least of my concern at the time.
Yeah. So, Mark, what was your experience? How did you find out that you were also in this this very unusual club?
Very much the same way as John, except I didn't know that I was adopted prior to 1997 when I saw it in the newspaper. Actually, a friend of mine who knew that I had been born at the Hicks Clinic, because it had become a running joke to some of my friends who had seen my birth certificate years earlier, called me on Mother's Day, on Sunday Mother's Day, and said, "Have you seen today's paper?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, you better go get the paper and look at it, because there's something in there you're going to want to see." But I did. I got a copy of the paper, and all over the front page was the story of the Hicks Clinic and Dr. Hicks. I knew I was born there, but I had been told by my parents that I was born on vacation and that they had had to stop in this small town, and that's where I was born. And it wasn't until that moment that it struck me that that wasn't the true story, and that's when I began my search.
It's amazing, Mark, to think that for you particularly, this was a double whammy, that you didn't know you were adopted, that your parents had told you you were not adopted, but you had a sneaking suspicion. As I understand your story, you didn't feel a connection to your parents. You thought there was something amiss, and you went after the map and started looking to find out if it was possible that you were really on the list. When you found out you were on the list, was this a relief or was this devastating?
I would have to say it was a relief. Because, yes, you're correct. Through my whole childhood, my parents were older. My friends were listening to rock and roll, and their parents were listening to rock and roll. But we were listening to old country twang music in my house, and I got razzed by my friends about that. And yes, there was a lack of affection that other kids I would observe getting from their parents. So I always had some kind of an inkling. I don't know where I got it, maybe just environmentally, that something wasn't quite right in our relationship with each other.
So, John, let me switch back to you for a moment, because there are a lot of Hicks babies who do not feel as though they were victims, but instead feel like maybe they were saved, because but for Dr. Hicks, many of these now grown adults say they might have been aborted, and that instead Dr. Hicks convinced these mothers to have these children and perhaps put them up for adoption, notwithstanding the ones who were told the baby died, in the delivery room. Where do you fall into that?
My situation that I found out was my biological mother was single, young lady that, of course, became pregnant. And her family was told that she just had, later on in life, that she had stomach cramps, that she's not supposed to be doing lifting or whatever. And later on, she was at the Hicks Clinic, and the room that she was in, a lady came out with a baby boy in a blue blanket and was walked out the back door. And they were wondering, you know, how did this baby come from our sister's room? So that's pretty much it. I was just handed right out, right from birth, handed right out the back door.
So do you consider yourself a victim in this incredible decades-long story?
Actually, no. Due to the circumstances, I don't know what kind of life I would have had with, you know, at first as a single mother back in those times. Times were hard. With the bringing up that I had, with the parents I had, the life I had, it was a blessing for me.
Mark, how about you? Do you have any sense one way or the other if maybe there were a chance you might not be talking to me today? If some of the other Hicks babies are right in what they feel, and that is that maybe this doctor saved you from perhaps an abortion and instead convinced this young mother to have you and adopt you out.
My case is a little bit different in that my mother was in her 30s and already had several other children by the time I came along. If Dr. Hicks ever really did play God, as they, you know, some people say, he probably did it in my case, realizing that my mother was in no condition to raise another child. So I feel very fortunate that Dr. Hicks, you know, was on the scene and was able to put me into a good family and basically get me out of there. We've all been down there, and we've seen the abject poverty that that folks lived in back in the 50s and 60s. It was a rough area, a rough part of the country, southern Appalachia, a lot of poverty. So I feel like I'm pretty fortunate to have had the opportunity to grow up in Akron with good friends, a good neighborhood, good schools. I had a lot to be thankful for. I still am.
All right. Well, I it's so fascinating to hear the perspectives, because it can be one way or the other or a little bit of both. And it is a very complex story. I'm going to ask the three of you to hold on, if you will, because after the break, the granddaughter of Dr. Hicks himself is going to share her insight about her family and about why her grandfather was running such an operation and what was going on in McKaysville at that time. Sally Hicks joins us next. Like any other granddaughter, Sally Hicks loved her grandfather, Dr. Thomas Hicks. But unlike most grandchildren, Sally would come to learn about the illegal adoption operation that her grandfather ran out of his clinic through the 1950s and the 60s. She's joining me tonight to offer up some insight into just what was going on. Sally Hicks, thank you for being a part of the program, and thank you for sharing, you know, your perspective on this. I suppose the most important question for you would be, was your grandfather playing God, or was your grandfather dancing with the devil?
I believe my grandfather was not playing God. I believe he was helping people that needed to be helped, and I'm grateful for him helping them. And being also adopted myself, it makes a big difference. In my perspective, I believe.
So I know that you yourself discovered that you're adopted. And to your knowledge, you are not one of your grandfather's Hicks babies. But are you absolutely certain? And can you be certain?
I am absolutely certain. I had done a search for my mother before all of this hit the news. And so I knew who I was, but I had cousins that told me that I was a Hicks baby. And so I asked their mother, which was my dad's sister, if I was. And she told me that my grandfather had tried to give my parents a baby back in the 50s. And that my mother wouldn't take it.
So the question I think that is so critical here is, if you think that your grandfather was helping people, how do you think the children out there who believe he was not, and the children out there who believe that he was running a black market and selling babies out the back door and telling the newly delivered mothers that their children had died, how does that square?
I believe people came to him because they had unwanted pregnancies. And in the 50s and 60s, it was taboo to have a baby out of wedlock or to have gotten pregnant with somebody else's baby when they were, husband may have been away. And so people went to him for help. Help me with this baby.
Jane, I want to bring you back into this conversation because I assume with all of the work that you have done speaking to so many of these Hicks babies who may feel as though the doctor did them a favor and may feel as though the doctor should have been locked up. When you hear Sally speak of her grandfather that way and say that he was helping women, how does that make you feel?
It just confirms to me that there were so many facets of Dr. Hicks that you just can't, I mean, you can't pin him down 100% of the time. When I think about when family members and people say, oh, you know, he had a good heart and he helped us out and stuff, I think to modern day human trafficking, those men and women that are basically selling women and children into sex trade and into slave labor, you know that some of them are calling their mothers on Mother's Day to say happy, have a good day, or their grandmother on their birthday. So, I mean, so there's different perspectives. Everybody's perspective is different. And I know how much Sally loved her grandfather, and he was probably the perfect grandfather to her. But there's still always going to be the aspect that he was selling babies and that there was no safety net for these babies. What if they went to a bad home? What if we haven't heard from these babies that didn't make it? My cousin Marky didn't make it because he wasn't in a good home. He died at the age of 12, running away from a family member that, you know, he was just extremely overbearing and a problem, and he got hit by a truck. So, I mean, there was no safety net. And I think that that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, so Sally, how do you feel when you hear that, when you hear some of the Hicks babies who feel very differently than you do about your grandfather?
It's hard to hear. I know a lot of them had difficult lives, but I'm still grateful as an adoptee to have been adopted myself, and I think a lot of people were. But I understand there's bad sides and good sides that I may never have heard.
I think that's a fair perspective, and certainly it is complicated, to say the very least. Sally, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to join us to tell us about your grandfather and your perspective. And to our audience, don't go anywhere, because when I say it's complicated, that's an understatement, and a trauma therapist is going to join me next to break down what this kind of revelation does to someone when you learn that your life begins as a lie. Dr. Elaine Dilbeck knows about this all too well because her father was also a Hicks baby. Her story is next. Person experiences a traumatic event during your lifetime, but what's it like to learn that your entire life began as a lie? And what you know about your birth story may or may not be true. That's what it's like being one of the Hicks babies, and my next guest knows this experience all too well. Her father was a Hicks baby, and now she treats Hicks babies. Trauma therapist Dr. Elaine Dilbeck joins me now. Dr. Dilbeck, thank you for joining the program. This is such a complex story and so many dynamics that are intersected. Some of the Hicks babies do not believe that Dr. Hicks was a monster, and others believe he was. How do you go about your work? And are there patterns that at least match in many of the Hicks babies that you've treated?
I think that most of the experience is based on the person's perception in the family that they were blessed or not blessed to go to. Unfortunately, my father was not like a few of them. He did not go to a good family. Or let me clarify that. My grandfather, my adopted grandfather, was a very, very good man. Very good man. He was a good father, good grandfather. My adopted grandmother was not. And so throughout my life, I've seen the results of what has happened to my dad through not being one of the fortunate children. And all of the ones that I have spoken to or been on their journey with them, and there's a mixture. Some are very grateful that of what Dr. Hicks did. They felt like that they went to good families and they wouldn't have traded their families for anything, but there's still a piece of them missing to some degree. Some feel that they did not get the opportunity to know their birth families. And like with my dad's mother, she was told that he died in childbirth along with his twin brother. So he will always have unanswered questions if he would have gotten to go to a good family, if his biological mother would have had that opportunity to love him.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Dilbeck. Do any of the Hicks babies you speak to, who are clearly now adults my age and older, do they feel in this new adult revelation some sense of sadness or guilt or trauma or tragedy for the birth mother who may have been told your baby didn't make it and was hustled out the back door in a theft?
Yes, ma'am, they do. They feel some sense of confusion. It describes it better. A sense of confusion of why were they not given the opportunity? And as some have stated, you know, I actually live just outside of McCaysville. I live in the Copper Hill area. So I'm here in this area. And even back in those days, it was very rural and continues to be. It's a tourist town now. But to have that opportunity to make that decision, whether they wanted to keep their children or not, that they were not given that. So there's a sense of confusion, a sense of loss, and to some degree, a sense of abandonment, not by choice, but not by their choice.
Can I pivot a little and ask about the sense of group that Jane Blasio has been able to establish with so many of these Hicks babies, the sense that they are not alone, the sense that she achieved herself by realizing she wasn't alone. How helpful, doctor, is that to the people who've discovered they're on the list?
Because it brings in a sense of community. That's what she's been able to do, is bring in a sense of community to where, you know, they don't have to explain to one another how they're feeling or what they're going through. Even when they agree or disagree on a point, even with Sally, she has been brought into this group and she has been loved by these adoptees and by this group, despite the relationship or how someone feels about her grandfather. She still is among friends, and we've loved her, and she loves us. And the only thing that she's ever wanted for us was to find the truth, just like Jane, no matter what she's had to find out. So it's like you're sitting in this group of people, and you're listening to what they're saying. and the sense of connection is just, it's unbelievable.
Right. I can imagine. Dr. Elaine Dielbach, thank you so much for your perspective and for adding to this story. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the daughter of the only living person to work for Dr. Hicks will join us. She is sharing stories of what her mother passed down to her, and she's answering some of the most asked questions. That's next. All this hour, we've been delving into the black market adoption ring that resulted in the selling of more than 200 babies in small town McHaysville, Georgia, back in the 50s and 60s. We're now hearing from the daughter of a woman who lived this experience firsthand. Kay Korn worked for Dr. Hicks in the early 1950s, and now her daughter, Ann Kramer, is here to share firsthand knowledge and stories that her mother has told her. Thank you, Anne, for being here. First and foremost, how much did your mother know what was going on in that clinic for the 5 years that she worked there?
Actually, my mother always told me that she didn't see a lot that was going on, but everybody was always, a lot of the women were coming and going. She never saw anything but positive things going on. My mother was not aware that they were actually, you know, adopting the babies out. She never
saw anything going out the back door. She didn't witness the back door pipeline from the delivery room out to the waiting car.
No, she never experienced anyone going out the back door. She said that a lot of women came in the front door. You know, they were expecting. She never saw anything, any adoption going on.
Was she a receptionist, or what role did she play?
My mother worked in the front office area, and she said that Dr. Hicks was always very nice to her. She saw most of the women that came in were expecting that were not married, and Dr. Hicks would take them in, and he never tried to force. My mother said they never were forced to give up their babies, okay? That it was entirely up to them. And it,
so is there any truth to this notion that several of the moms in the delivery room were told your baby didn't survive?
Mom says she never heard that. And my mother's 90 today, but she's got a very good sound mind. And she wished she could be here today. I actually have a picture of her, okay? But my mother told me there was never anything that indicated that they were being adopted. But I do have a family member that gave up a baby that I've never told before, that was actually a very close family member, actually my mother's sister. She had a baby, and it was given up. And my
was your
aunt
mom
did
working
it,
in the clinic when her sister was there? I'm assuming at the clinic. So was your mom working in the clinic when her sister came to the clinic and gave the baby up for adoption?
Yes. Yes. It was my aunt. And she was about 16 years old. Okay. And so she gave her baby up. And later, my aunt tried to find it, and she couldn't. But she didn't know how to go about doing that. My aunt gave it up willingly because she couldn't keep it. She had no means of supporting the child.
So did your mom ever say that there was a string of women leaving the clinic, I assume, out the front door, devastated, and they came in pregnant, but they left without a baby?
But she never saw anyone ever come in and actually that was upset or when they left or anything. Like, you know, she said, I never saw any of the women that was upset about leaving their baby. They gave their babies up freely. McHaysville, Georgia is a very poor area, okay? And most of the women there did not have any means of supporting their children, and especially one that wasn't married.
And so when you say they gave them up freely, do you think that some of these, let's say, younger mothers may have been pressured into giving their babies up because that's just the way it was done in the 50s and 60s. Parents said, young lady, you're going into that clinic and you will be coming out alone.
Exactly. That's the way that mom saw it, okay? And mom said that, you know, she also worked for his wife, Mrs. Hicks, okay? But my mother said she never saw anything that he was doing wrong, okay? If he was doing things wrong, it was not a public thing, okay? And I was raised and born within 5 miles of the Hicks Clinic. And actually, he delivered my brother and my sister.
How do you think, well, at least what does your mom say Dr. Hicks' reputation was in the town, given the fact that, you know, abortion back then was illegal and these were illegal procedures that were being, you know, conducted. And then the notion that so many of those, you know, moms were coming out without babies and babies were going out the back door. What was the impression around town?
Well, most people were very private. They didn't talk about it. You know, it was a private thing. You weren't, they knew it was going on, okay? But they didn't talk about it. It was something very kind of just hidden, I guess, okay? And it was a small mining town. I guess you know about that. And they just didn't have no other way, I guess, of getting help, okay? Because Atlanta is 2 hours away. So Dr. Hicks was about the only doctor in town.
And so many of the folks, you know, who've been asked now, decades later, have mixed feelings as to whether he was a hero or a villain. Ann Kramer, I'm so thankful that you took the time to tell us your mother's story. I appreciate you coming on today. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much.
I also want to thank my other guests tonight, Jane Blasio, John Stapleton, Mark Eckenrode. Thank you all for sharing your stories. And I'll just remind you that Taken at Birth is Jane Blasio's book, and that is available. Thank you all for watching. We'll see you again tomorrow.